Time to get up and get your day started.
Morant. Oh! A jawbreaker!
It's Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now, here are your hosts, Greg and Eli.
You get up every morning from the long clock's warning, taking 8:15 into the city. There's a whistle up above and people pushing, people shoving at the girls who try to look pretty. And if your dreams aren't time, you can get to work by 9. It's like a sleeping job to get your pay. If you ever get annoyed, look at me, I'm self-employed. I love to work at nothing all day.
Welcome to Sports 56 Mornings. There we go. Happy hump day to you and yours. It's the Wednesday, April 8th, 2026 edition. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, and Jay Ham with you, broadcasting live and local as we do every day, every show, from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure, their spring sale going on right now at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. Interesting day planned for you today. We got a lot of things coming together with the Masters getting started tomorrow, but today is the annual Par 3 event. They had the Champions Dinner last night, minus one Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. So that was very strange, to say the least. And, of course, it was Rory McIlroy, the host, after completing the career Grand Slam with the Masters win last year. Will there be a surprise this year? Normally, there's not a first-timer. There's not a rookie. It's usually that same group of 20 that you could pick the winner from. But who knows with this year? Scottie Scheffler, not off to the greatest season. We've had guys who have dealt with injuries as well, including Colin Morikawa on his back. So I think it's pretty wide open to a certain extent. We will talk plenty about the Masters on the program today. Of course, NBA final week of the regular season. The Grizzlies back in action tonight. They have three games to go. As teams continue to jockey for playoff position, we know the playoff teams, but there's still some battles going on for seeding. And then, of course, there's the whole tanking situation as we get set for the NBA draft lottery next month. And then, of course, the draft in June. Major League Baseball moving right along, I guess, in the second full week of the regular season. We had a brawl last night, in case you missed it, out in Anaheim, a brawl between the Angels and the Braves. We'll discuss that. Memphis Tigers spring football into week number 3. So things winding down in Charles Huff's first spring practice session. We will discuss that on the program today. We got some other things as well planned for you, as we always do. DeMichael Cole will join us at 8:05 to talk Grizzlies and the NBA. Jerry Palm, his final visit with us for this season. We'll wrap up what he saw in the Natty on Monday night with the Michigan Wolverines taking home the crown, knocking off the UConn Huskies. Jerry will be back with us in August to kick off a new football season. We will not have Parth Upadhyay with us today, but we will talk Memphis Tigers basketball with the portal now open for day number 2. Doesn't mean you're going to get all these signings here in the first 24 or 48 hours, but things will start to trickle in, and then they'll start to really come in fast and furious. So those are some of the topics we'll have for you today on the program. We'll take your calls and texts, as always, on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener lines at 901-360-8255. Weather-wise, should be another spectacular day. Right now, it is 50 degrees. It's going to warm up to near 80 today. More likely around 78, 79, but we may hit 80. And then tonight, 55 for a low, with mostly cloudy skies. The rest of the week looks brilliant as well. Hope you took advantage of that beautiful weather yesterday. The same today. Tomorrow, 2% chance of precip, 80 degrees. Friday, 5% chance, 81. Saturday, 8% precipitation chance, 83. We're up to 85 on Sunday. And no rain in the forecast until the middle of next week. Of course, as I always say, subject to change. So kick back, relax, and enjoy. We got 3 hours of sports talk coming your way. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's going on?
Well, a little down, a little tough times right now.
Wait a minute here. Tough times for you? You're always the half glass guy. You're usually
the half glass guy?
Whatever it's called.
I get the half glass.
Half,
still
what is
half
it?
Glass.
What's the saying?
Half glass full.
Half glass full guy. There you go.
glass half full.
Whatever the hell it is.
Half a glass.
Half a glass is better than no glass. That's what I say.
Positive half glass.
I prefer a full glass.
I'm with you.
I mean, if you serve me a half glass, it depends what it is, I guess.
If it's brown,
probably don't need the full glass.
You don't need the full glass.
Probably a little light pour would probably work as far as that goes. But otherwise, generally, I'm refilling his beer.
Anytime the beer goes half full glass,
I ain't accepting no half glass stuff. No, the Cubs, tough times for the Cubs right now. Tough situation with the old Cubs. The news came down yesterday, the news that I was fearing, but it's expecting after Cade Horton left the game on whatever day it was, last Friday, that he pitched and left after one inning. And the news came yesterday that he does need elbow surgery, and he is done for the year.
Ah.
Matthew Boyd went on the DL. Yes, well, 2 days ago, I guess that was Monday that they officially put him on the injured list, although his is not serious. And with Justin Steele recovering from his surgery last year, it's basically the top three starting pitchers currently out for the Cubs. And again, with Cade Horton done for the year, that's a similar to Justin Steele last year, that we don't have that one of our main guys for basically the entire season. That is a big hit for the Cubs.
Jayham, perhaps Eli is the jinx. He's in Memphis. We got the Grizzlies with all these injuries, his favorite baseball team, the Cubs going through all these injuries. Maybe it's him. Maybe he's Schlepper.
Don't do that to our guy, Greg.
I could be. I'm looking for answers. I'm just looking for answers.
Maybe it is. I don't know. It's
you did get Alex Bregman, though, to break out of his 0-for-13 slump, and the Cubs did win. They knocked off the Tampa Bay Rays. Woohoo! 9-2. So there you go.
Yeah, they did get a win. That's nice, but going to be tough sledding in the old starting pitching rotation for the next certainly until Boyd gets back, and hopefully Steele can they expect him back sometime in the first half, they say at this point. But yeah, that I love Cade Horton, but he missed the end of last year. Because they've been very careful with him because he's already had Tommy John surgery in his past. But now they got to go back in and do something with the UCL. They don't know exactly what until they get in there this time. But that is that one hurt. That was a big shot. It was not, I knew it was probably coming after the way he left the game the other day, but I was hoping for the best and maybe some luck would prevail, but it did not.
Yeah, but it's early in the season. And then, of course, if things are going decently well, once you get to the trade deadline, you can make moves. The Cubs would be willing to certainly supplement that pitching staff with an arm or two where other teams may not want to go down that route. So we'll see. Again, early in baseball, and I got some baseball to get to in just a second. I did want to tell you that I nearly cut my ear off this morning. Just a programming note.
We have to hear this story real
going
quick.
Going Van Gogh? Is it Van Gogh?
Yes, Vincent Van Gogh.
Vincent Van Gogh, yeah, my art history. I remember I took an art history class way back when sometime in my history.
Art history class?
I did take an art history class.
That had to be as boring as any class you could ever take.
And he actually remembered a fact.
I honestly think that might be the only thing I remember from that class is that Vincent Van Gogh cut off his ear. But and even saying it, I was like, I don't know if that's Van Gogh or not. Like maybe it's one of the other ones, but I think that if you put a Vincent Van Gogh painting in front of me, wouldn't know. Wouldn't be able to tell you in anything. But I do remember the ear situation.
Now, Van Gogh, he cut his own ear off, right?
Yes.
He did it. But do you remember, guys, the story of, and this is going back to I think it's the late 60s or early 70s, J. Paul Getty's grandson, I think it was, they kidnapped him in Italy, and they cut part of his ear off for, like, ransom, and I think they eventually got the kid back. But it was a big story. They made a movie out of this thing, maybe, I don't know, in the last probably 10 years, they made a movie about it.
I mean, I've seen movies where, you know, those types of ransoms have come about, not with ears, but like a finger or something of that nature. But I've never heard of the story that you're referring
to. So, with me, and this drives my wife crazy, absolutely crazy, among many things, but I have a compulsion to, like, in the morning, after I take my shower and I start to fix my hair, I don't have much left, but if I see a piece out of place, I cut it. I cut the hair. I'm like I'm a barber or something. The barber of Seville, and I saw a piece back of my ear, And I'm still in my sleep. I'm literally in my sleep the first hour of the show, trying to make it through. And I snapped and I cut the ear. Instead of the hair, I got the ear. So it was bleeding for 20 minutes. I finally got the bleeding to stop, got to put a Band-Aid on. I took the Band-Aid off right before the show. That's why who's ever watching right now, I'll point to it. You can probably see the cut right there. But the Band-Aid's off and it stopped bleeding. So that's the good news. Or the better news is that I didn't cut my whole part of my ear off.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting move to cut your hair.
I know. It's a compulsion.
That's something.
It's a compulsion. I have it. Do you guys have any compulsions? Something? Are you OCD? Anything like that? Any of you guys?
I do, but it's like I have to actually think about it. I try to just let it roll. I try not to be OCD about really anything, but I understand what you're saying.
See, I have to have things in order. Like, I have to have things in order.
I kind of like that, too. I kind of have a routine that I stick with in that manner, just morning, evening, whatever the case. Even when I go to the gym, it's like I don't have an arm day or a leg day. I go arm, leg, arm, leg, arm, leg.
Right.
You know, just that type of deal, but not nothing, I guess, too deep.
Yeah, look, I have routines. Like I do, I have routines in the gym as well, but I don't call that OCD. What I have is OCD is, I mean, this goes back to when I was a kid, and then when I was in college, my buddies, my fraternity guys would bust my chops because I would have, like, on my bureau, I would have my cologne. I would have, like, 6-7 bottles of cologne.
On my bureau. How what an old statement. On my bureau.
Well, I don't know what it's called.
Tell me you're old without telling me you're old.
But I would line them up.
On my bureau.
They would be perfectly symmetrical from each other. Like, if there was 2 inches between the bottle, they would all be 2 inches. And they would bust my chops because it's not like I was real compulsive in cleaning. So there would be dust around them. But as long as they were – like, if one got moved, one of the guys would move it. I'd come in the room, and I knew they moved it. And we'd get into fights and everything. So, yeah, I'm pretty much like that.
Well, you got it like that. We got to give them the bureau.
Yeah,
it can't just be a dresser.
Isn't that what it's called? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, no, I mean,
it's a bureau, right?
That's a variation. That's cool.
Most people would call it a dresser.
Yeah, most would say it's a dresser.
I think I've always called it a bureau. It's the news bureau. It's the Washington, D.C. news bureau.
Let's go to the bureau in my bedroom.
Are you like that? Are you have any compulsion?
I don't know. I'm not really. Like, I mean, I'm an organized person, but I don't have to have, like, does it have to be like in the same spot or like, I don't go crazy, but I just like things to kind of be somewhat in order, not just laying all over the place.
Right.
But
I put my clothes out the night before.
I did it for a long time.
Yeah. My clothes are ready to go. So when I wake up, take my shower, they're right there.
It's just right there. Just jump through. Go ahead.
And my wife's the complete opposite. So my wife won't shut off a light, close a door, lock a door. I got to go behind and do all that stuff.
My wife will not shut. They don't shut off. Nobody in my family will shut off lights. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand.
The part because I generally like it dark. Like I don't. So I turn off lights all the time because I generally don't want to be in the light.
Right. My people will be like, "Why are you in the dark?" And I may have 3 or 4 games on. I'm like, it's theater room. You know.
It does look better if you're watching TV and it's dark. But I'm always doing work, preparing for the show, so I like it. I like it lit, but. If I leave the room or we're going out of the house, I want the lights off.
You guys, your family doesn't cut the lights off because the bill is in your guys' name. That's why.
I don't even think of the bills. I just it bothers me. But it bothers me when our closet door's open. I'm like, shut the damn closet door. Because so many times we've got 3 cats. The one little cat will get in there. And where's the cat? Well, it's in that damn bedroom.
He's trapped in the closet.
Yeah, because I closed the door after you didn't close it at first, and the cat went into that room. So anyway.
John texts in, by the way, says, being from the East Coast, I also call it a bureau.
Thank you, John.
Even though many call it a dresser. Maybe it's a East Coast thing. I don't know. I don't think I've ever heard it called a bureau.
You think you can go to Ashley Furniture and ask them for a bureau?
I don't know. Ashley's a Southern company, isn't it?
Right.
I think they're from Texas.
Is there anything, if I go to a furniture store, is there anything labeled a bureau? I can't imagine there is.
Not down this part of the country, no.
Google it and see. Ashley Furniture Bureaus.
I walked in there and I just, I look all over. Could I find something that says, like, bureau? I don't know. I wouldn't even know if you would have said, like a bureau, like just said, go get a bureau, I'd be like, I don't know what the hell a bureau, like a bureau, a thing. Like I, how, what do I, what am I getting? I wouldn't know a dresser. Like I wouldn't know that's what I'm looking for. I wouldn't know what a bureau is.
I didn't know of it as a bureau until you mentioned it. And I just, oh, he must mean a dresser.
I'd be like the FBI, the Federal That's Bureau right. of Investigation. Like I can't get that. Like I don't know.
I mean, of course, I know of a dresser rather, but bureau was what I grew up. I always knew it as a bureau.
And my favorite part is where you said you didn't even dust around it, but you knew when it
right.
one inch apart.
Right. I wasn't. I mean, I'm clean, but like if there's dust, that didn't bother me. But if the one cologne was moved to the side a little bit, it drove me crazy. I had to make it straight. And I'm still my shoelaces. They have to be in the middle of the two shoes. They have to be laying down. They can't be like all willy-nilly. The shoelaces have to be in order. I mean, it's a problem.
In the middle of the two shoes?
Like if I have my two shoes on the ground, right, next to each other, and the laces have to be put in between the two shoes.
He don't want his laces.
I'm not wearing the shoes. The shoes are on the ground. The laces are not on the sides. They're down the middle, laid out straight.
I can imagine he keeps his laces intact for a good while.
That is serial killer behavior right there. That's frightening. I don't even know what that is. That's bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, just ask my wife.
You started off saying it was OCD, so
I told you. I mean, I'm not lying. Last night, as we turn to sports, this is what we do. We had an actual brawl in Major League Baseball. It was a late game out on the West Coast. It was the Braves and the Angels. And this was a pretty good Donnybrook. The Angels ended up losing the game 7-2. But Jorge Soler went absolutely bonkers. Soler had hit a home run earlier in the game against Ronaldo Lopez. And he has dominated him over his career. And then he got hit by a pitch. But then this at bat, it was a ball high and inside over his head, which, by the way, hit the back of the backstop, came right back to the catcher. He threw it to second. There was a run on first, nearly threw him out. But as that was going on and the throw was the second base, Soler and Lopez had the stare down. And Soler went at him. And he started throwing punches, and Lopez is backing off. And these are two huge human beings. And little Walt Weiss, the manager, the skipper of the Braves, tackled Soler from behind. He was a coach when Soler was with him in Atlanta. Is that correct?
Yes.
But Weiss now is the skipper of the Braves. He tackles Soler, and eventually calmer heads prevailed. But that was a pretty good one last night.
I mean, the punches were terrible.
Well, Soler tried.
No chance at landing. He's like throwing open-handed slaps with no looking.
Not Manny Pacquiao. I'll give him a break. I mean, he tried to hit him.
The Lopez had the weird thing of holding on to the baseball, swinging with the baseball. Like, that's a weird move. That's
an interesting technique.
I don't think I've ever seen a pitcher who kept the baseball in his hand and basically was using that as a weapon, swinging with it. Normally, they would drop the ball and actually use a fist, but he kept swinging with the baseball in hand, which, good, interesting move. I'm not sure how effective that is, and he wasn't. I guess he somewhat hit Soler's helmet, I think, at one time with the baseball, which hitting that with a baseball rather than your fist is a better thing for a pitcher. If you're going to hit somebody in the helmet, I'd much rather do it with a baseball than with my fist. So maybe it was a smart move on his part to continue to hold on to the baseball.
Weiss said, I love Soler. We were teammates here, referring to Soler's time with the Braves in 21 and in 24. But that's a big man. I just felt I got to get him off his feet because he's going to hurt somebody. And so that was my instinct, just to get in there and get Jorge off his feet because he was on a warpath. It's just a shame the situation and how things unfold, Lopez said through an interpreter. On my part, there was never any intent to hit him at any point, so again, it's just a shame. Well, Soler homered off him in this first at-bat, then was hit by a 96-mile-per-hour fastball in his second at-bat. He's 14 for 23 all-time against him with 5 homers, 3 doubles. I would think maybe there was some intent there. Maybe not to hit him, but he'd already plunked him, which again, you could argue whether or not that was purposely done, and then he throws it over his head. So I think there was some intent. I think that's BS.
Walt is correct. The Soler is a big man. Now, Lopez is too, but Soler is Jorge Soler, although again, after watching him try and throw those punches, maybe I wouldn't be quite as frightened, but just looking at him, He's an intimidating human being that I would not want angry at me. That's for sure. But it's like the night before we had the Wilson Contreras
right
situation, which that one is so bizarre to me because the Brewers just always plunk him. The Brewers hit him constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 24 times or something like that now.
That's crazy.
That he's been hit up by the Brewers, and I believe it's 6 by Brandon Woodruff alone, and Brandon Woodruff's the one that hit him the other night. And then after the game, he said, like, listen, next time he said, I'm taking one of them out.
Yeah.
He
called out the entire organization.
He's threatening death. At this point, he's threatening to kill somebody if they hit him again. Now, he doesn't play them as much anymore since he's finally gotten out of the NL Central. He used to play them all the time because he was with the Cubs and the Cardinals, so he played them all the time. But so he doesn't have to worry about playing them constantly, although they're still continuing the series. I don't think anything happened last night. But that cracks me up because here he is. He continues to get plunked by this pitching staff. He's threatening to take out one of those guys. And his brother's the catcher for the team. So you're like, literally, your brother is the guy behind the plate. While these pitchers are, in your mind, throwing at you, trying to hit you, and you are now threatening to take one of them out. And your brother's the catcher.
I'm sure they've battled over the years, huh?
It needs to be like, hey, William, could you go tell your pitchers to quit throwing at me? Or more, maybe his brother is the one calling it every time. The brother's like, hit him. Hit him again.
That's who we go get take out, his brother.
It's just like you are literally like your brother's right there and you're like threatening to kill his pitching staff and everybody else. It's like, I just have a talk with my brother. Like, hey, dude, can you get your pitchers to quit throwing balls at me? I would really appreciate it.
I'm trying to find in the history here, what player has been hit the most times by one team? You say Contreras now, it's what, 24?
I think it's 24 is what I read about with that when that happened.
Yeah, all I'm finding is like career hit by pitches. You got this guy named Huey Jennings, which goes way back, 287, but Biggio, 285. Don Baylor held the modern record for a long time at 267. But I can't find an individual major leaguer who has been hit the most times by one team.
I believe, in the time frame that they have hit Contreras that many times, I can't remember. I think in the story it had who, like, was the next most, and it wasn't even close.
I wonder how many times he's been hit. That's easy to probably look that up. But from other teams that have hit him.
Well, this one, for him, he's been hit 24 times by Milwaukee. That's 10 more than any other team has hit him.
Mm.
And again, Woodruff is 6 of the 24 just by himself. But again, his brother's been the catcher for most of those.
He's probably telling them to hit him.
Sit your brother down. Tell him, hey, I'll get you a bigger Christmas present next year if you just get your pitchers to stop plunking me so I don't have to kill one of them.
We are just underway on this Wednesday edition of Sports 56 Mornings. It was a huge game for a former Memphis prep star and one-time Memphis Grizzlies last night, one member of the Grizzlies last night in the NBA. We'll go around the association when we return. Just getting underway on this Wednesday. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Add a little fun to your lunch break. Join Johnny Radio for Sports 56 Happy Hour from 11 to 1 every weekday on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Sports 56 Mornings.
Morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
One other baseball note. The Pirates have made it official now. Everybody kind of knew this was coming, but Connor Griffin, their stud prospect that they called up last week, a 9-year, $140 million extension, which is a team record contract for the Pirates. So they have officially gotten that deal done with Griffin for 9 years and $140 million. Look at the Pirates spending some money on
it. I was just going to say that. So Paul Skeens whatever he's making now, when they re-up with him, because I assume they are going to, the two of those guys and those combined salaries will probably be more than some of their payrolls of recent years, total payrolls.
Well, I wouldn't be so confident that they... Skeens probably plays it out and waits to go through arbitration and then get to free agency.
Yeah, if that happens, that would be terrible for the Pirates and for a small market team. But you're already up in with this rookie. Why not do everything you can to entice Paul to stay in Pittsburgh, to make it his home, to be there the bulk of his career, to assure him that they're going to be committing now financially? And I think this is a good step. In the right direction for the Buccos, who have been irrelevant for a long time. The Grizzlies, final week of the regular season in the NBA, three games to go. Tonight they'll play in Denver. Friday they'll play in Utah. Sunday they'll play in Houston. The Grizzlies got some help last night, which we'll talk about in a second as far as the draft lottery is concerned. But they come in at 25 and 54. The Nuggets at 51 and 28. The Grizz yesterday announcing that Adama Ball has signed a second 10-day, so that still leaves the Grizzlies at 33 players used this year, which ties the mark from a couple of seasons ago. So they didn't go out and get anybody different. They re-signed Ball. By the way, really good story from DeMichael Cole, who will join us at 8:05, on the friendship in France between Adama Ball and Ryan Rupert, both now playing for the Grizzlies on these 10-day deals and these small contracts, but together playing again and now in the NBA. But the Grizzlies tonight, the Nuggets. Friday, that's the game right there, that Utah game. And then Sunday, Rockets. Last night, the Pelicans, again, it's not their pick. They're not playing for anything as far as draft status in the lottery. But they beat the Jazz last night. 156 to 137 in the highest scoring game of the season. 293 points combined by those two teams. Defense was very optional. But in that game, Kennedy Chandler, who was on a 10-day with the Jazz, went for 31 points, 7 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals, hit 2 of 3 threes, and all came off the bench. The former prep star, the Memphian, the one-time Memphis Grizzly. Jeremiah Fears, by the way, and oh, by the way, 40-point performance, 5 rebounds, 6 assists for the rookie for the New Orleans Pelicans. But that helps certainly the Grizzlies' cause. The problem is going to be this. The Pelicans have two tough games to play. I think they're going to lose both those games. The Grizzlies, I think, certainly will lose tonight, and I believe Sunday, even if the Rockets don't play a bunch of their guys, the problem is going to be Friday against Utah.
Utah's, they're committed. They're fully committed to making sure they lose. I mean, that's 156 points for New Orleans last night without Zion, without Herb Jones, without Sadiq Bey. You talk about defense optional. Pelicans shot 58% for the game. And in that game, there were, what was the total here? There were 210 field goal attempts.
Do the math.
106 for New Orleans, 104 for Utah. 210 field goal attempts.
If you do the math,
47 free throws.
How quickly are they getting a shot off? Every possession.
So Mike D'Antoni's pleasing.
Yes.
Under 7 seconds.
He's smiling.
210 field goals, 47 free throws combined.
We've been talking a lot about tanking, and it's a problem. Last night, I didn't watch the game, but I saw the score before I ended up hitting the sack. The Clippers were playing the Mavericks. Obviously, the Mavericks are tanking. The game was, I think it was like 16-0 to start. It was 29-6 when I went to bed. 29-6, Clippers ended up winning the game by 13 over the Mavericks. So the Mavericks are a part of it as well. And I don't know. When it's all said and done, it's going to come down to that darn game between the... Now, the Pelicans still have to play Chicago, I think, on Sunday, which could help the Grizzlies' cause. But it's going to be that Grizzlies-Jazz game on Friday. You're going to have two teams who are the ultimate tankers trying to out-tank each other. And there is a story on ESPN.com today about the tanking issue. And there's been a number of stories written here, especially in recent weeks. This one's pretty comprehensive. ESPN had conversations with dozens of players, coaches, and front office executives to kind of basically see where they stand on everything that's going on with tanking. And they say a consistent theme emerged. Nobody likes it. Steve Kerr said, "I hate it, but not many deny it is often the most prudent team-building path when stuck near the bottom." Now in collegiate sports, we have the transfer portal, which is the quickest way to turn around your program. Well, in the NBA, the easiest way to turn around your organization, although nothing's guaranteed, is tanking and getting a high draft pick and then nailing that draft pick or picks. Different seasons and different drafts will generate different forms. I'm reading this right from the article. But everyone agrees it'll continue until the NBA figures out either the proper rules or punishments to curb it. Quote, "These teams are doing the whole gamut. Sitting guys in the fourth, playing analytically bad lineups, drawing up plays for bad shots. One Western Conference general manager said the creativity is impressive, and I don't blame them. It's the best strategy to get better. Look at all the most promising teams in the league. Thunder, Spurs, Pistons, Rockets, Hornets. Years of being bad and building up on high picks. It's painful, but worthwhile. The strategies are growing in audaciousness and frequency of use. The orders from management are coming in earlier in the season, creating months of competitively compromised and often unwatchable basketball. The average margin of victory in NBA games this season is 13.1 points, the largest spread in history, and a record 89 games have been decided by 30 or more points. There is an aspect of team building that is called a genuine rebuild, a rebuild with integrity," Commissioner Adam Silver said in a late March news conference. "The problem we're having these days is it's become almost impossible to distinguish between the tank and the rebuild. It's one that we take very seriously, and we are going to fix it. Full stop." And I want to say that directly to our fans. Comments? Thoughts? We're still questioning whether or not they can fix it. But it is a problem.
Again, I don't think the fans think it is as big of a problem as people act like fans think it is.
Are less people going to games and less people watching on television with the ratings? Do we know that? Do we have any?
Now the ratings have been very solid.
Like, people aren't going because your team's tanking. They're not going because your team's bad. But like, they don't care.
But your team's bad because you're tanking.
No, you start tanking because your team's already bad. Like, you already know you're out of it. Like, there's no reason. Like, the Grizzlies didn't tank to start the season.
No.
They started tanking once they realized, okay, we're done. So once your team's bad, you start tanking.
But I think they also manipulated injuries. I also think that they did that, too.
They're not going because they don't want to. Like generally, you don't go watch bad teams. Like, if they're not going, it's not. So I don't think, because fans understand it. Like, fans look at it and go, like, it's smarter for them to tank at this point. We're bad. We're not going anywhere. We want to get a better draft pick. Yes, they should tank. Like, fans get it. I don't think fans are like, well, this is dumb that the Grizzlies are trying to lose games. They get it. Like, they're like, it's smart that they're trying to lose games. That's what they should be doing.
Small markets that struggle with attendance, and I don't know, you know, which teams would fall into that category, if it happens for multiple years, in other words, you tank, you don't get that pick. You don't nail the draft pick. And you're back next year tanking again. How long until the fans say, that's it? I don't want to buy tickets.
That's a good question, and even more so, it's happened with so many teams for so long anyway.
Right.
It's like you look at Sacramento and how often they're Washington. In the mix for that. Washington. You can find the easier time of spots where they were good and competitive. Like with Washington, I can go to John Wall and Brad Beal, that era, 6-7 years that they were together, whatever. But other than that, it's like I would have to go search for one.
Right, and with the Kings, you go back to Weber and all that.
Right.
But here's the thing. Sacramento, much smaller market than Washington, D.C. D.C. supports its sports really, really well. But Sacramento must be doing okay because we never hear – oh, you know, move the Kings somewhere.
Sacramento has great support. They've done
right.
3 years. I've had great support there. But
after a while, you got to get tired of it.
Fans get frustrated with their team being bad. Again, it's not they don't get frustrated with the tanking portion, if they understand the tanking portion of it at the end of the year. Like, it's – that's – again, fans think it's smart.
Oh, I agree with that.
And they get frustrated with the organization, everything else. And there will be Grizzlies fans who aren't renewing their tickets because of this year. But that's not the I hate the fact that they tanked it for the last whatever month, 2 months of the season. No, they're mad because they've been bad. They whatever. It's not the fact. It's not what they've done the last 2 months that has gotten them to go, oh, I can't. I'm not going to renew my season tickets.
I agree with that. But don't you question the integrity of the organization when they're not putting their best foot forward, when they're not trying?
They're doing the smart thing.
But drawing up plays to lose. I just rattled off the reasons this is from players, coaches, and general managers
and
anonymous.
And what did they say? It's the best thing to do.
They did. They did.
It's what's known. Like,
but then Silver says, no, we can't have this, though. Even though everybody's admitting it's the best thing for these teams to get better.
Yes. As a commissioner of a league, the thought out there, like, the teams are losing on purposely, you have to try and figure out a way. But again, fans, my point is, fans don't care. Like, fans get it. From the teams that tank, fans generally like, yes, this is the smart route for a team. So they always act like it's for the fans. The fans don't care.
They get it if there's a payoff at the end. If it lingers for years and years and there's no payoff, they will give up. But yes, if there's a payoff in the end. Let me go to the Sissy's Law Cabin listener line. CD is dialed in. Good morning, CD.
Good morning, gentlemen. I understand what the Grizzlies are doing, and I get it. But here's my question. Right now, based on the standings, the Grizzlies are probably number 9 or number 10 of the teams that are not going to be in the playoff, including the play-in.
No, they're not that low.
Based on the standings.
They're right now, they are tied for sixth.
They're tied for sixth right now. They won't fall won't fall below eighth, I don't believe.
So right now, between sixth and eighth.
Yes, they'll be sixth, seventh, or eighth.
Based on what's out there for this year's draft, if their players, if they get lucky in a selection, can turn this franchise around.
Sure.
And if that player is out there, who is it? And I'll listen to all three of you, who you think that player is.
All right, CD. Thank you now.
Well, it depends where they're picking. Again, you get lucky and you move up into the top four. That's one thing. You get really unlucky and you end up picking 10th or 11th. Teams behind you move up, whatever. But, you know, again, with this draft, the top guys, the DeBonses, Petersons, Boozer, Caleb Wilson, which most people kind of feel like that's going to be the top four. And we'll see. And then you got the group of point guards that we've talked a number of times about, Acuff, Wagler, Flemings, Brown in that grouping. Then you've got
Lendeborg.
Other guys that are out there that some people will like, some people won't like, based on age, other things like that. But the LeBaron Filons and Lendeborgs and
Cameron Carr, Gangba.
I think a lot of those guys, some are franchise changers.
Right.
Some are really good players who are going to make big impacts on franchises. Some will turn out to be busts. It's just the odds in history tell you somebody in that group just won't be as good as we think they're going to be. Finding that person or avoiding that person, whatever. Well, no, but if you're in the top 10 or 11, you will have a chance to get a very good player who should make a very big impact on your franchise if you pick correctly.
I'm telling you right now, there is somebody that's going to be picked 10th or later and is going to be an absolute star in the NBA, 8-9-time NBA All-Star. And there's going to be at least one of those guys. This is the type of draft where somebody and probably more than one team is going to come out feeling pretty good about themselves. And it may not be necessarily always the top four or five guys, even though Eli's right. Those four or five kind of have separated themselves a bit, but I think it's the deepest draft I've seen since the draft with Harden and all those guys that went.
And like you said, it's probably a draft where you go through each tier of the draft, lottery, late first round, early second round. You're going to find a guy who will end up being a superstar.
Well, then that's the thing.
No question.
And the Grizzlies not only will have their pick wherever that falls, but and now Orlando is bumped back up into the 8th spot. that race of the East is crazy from 5 through 9, but really 5 through 10. But Miami with a loss last night has put themselves a little behind the eight ball. But and then they've got that early second round pick of Indiana's. So they basically the Grizzlies are going to have three picks in the top like 32 of this draft. So they certainly have an ability to using those any way they want. If it's maybe to combine a couple to move up to get somebody they want, mm-hmm. or it's just using all three, whatever, they have the ability to make a big impact on the roster with this draft. And so if they draft correctly, yeah, this it speeds up the rebuild. Now, but you got to draft correctly. And then, right. And again, Zach Kleiman generally has done pretty darn well in the draft.
Well, even after you draft correctly, you still have to have that luck with health.
Yeah, oh yeah, well yeah. we always have to throw that in with the Grizzlies. Right. As long as they don't all like you know have bad big toes or great toes, however, what they're calling it with these guys, this wave of players, if their big toes can hold up and who knows what else, then yeah, if you get a little lucky, but yeah, you can change this thing, your fortunes pretty darn quickly when you're set up with one of the great drafts. Theoretically on paper, and you have three basically top 30, 32 picks.
I'm looking at guys, this is just ESPN's mock, guys late in the first round and then into the second round. I can't tell you, nobody could tell you right now whether or not these guys will pan out, but guys like we saw in the NCAA tournament, a guy like Crevis, the big center for Arizona. Caraban, who's a shooter for Connecticut with good size. Joshua Jefferson, who got hurt for Iowa State, is a second rounder. Mora's a second rounder. How dominant was he as a big? Malik Thomas, who I love at Arkansas, but was overshadowed by Acuff. They got him in 37th pick. Alex Condon from Florida. Richie Saunders, who ended up getting hurt for BYU. How about Mo Johnson, how good he was for Michigan in the NCAA tournament? These guys are all second-round dudes. I mean, the 50th pick is Dame Saar. I think he's got a long way to go. Man, oh man, this draft, I am so excited about the draft lottery, first of all, and then the actual draft itself. And you're right, Eli. I mean, this is the way that teams can turn around their fortunes. There's no guarantees, even if you have the first overall pick. But the odds are better that you will. So, yes, I can understand fans excited about that, but you can't have, and luckily for the Grizzlies, they don't have 6-7 years of just awfulness.
Yeah, you don't want it to become your culture.
Right.
You know, every year.
Like, and injuries have ruined right. it for them.
Because even right? like we see it with Charlotte. Charlotte had that tag on them for a long mm-hmm. time until right now.
Yeah, exactly. now they've finally got, they've guys healthy together.
Yeah, guys so like, healthy.
You know, that's one of the things with Washington. You know, Washington has had horrendous draft lottery luck.
Yeah,
that's like right.
They've been the worst record, and they fall down to five or whatever. Right. Like they never seem to win the lottery, even with the worst record.
Yeah. And then one time they did win it, they got John Wall out of it.
And they'll be interesting, that team, because they brought in Trae Young and Anthony Davis right. to go along with right. the young guys that they have on that team. Well, speaking of basketball, take your basketball skills to the next level at Shoot 360 Memphis, a revolutionary basketball training facility with two locations in Collierville and in Cordova. Combines cutting-edge technology with gamification, provides instant objective feedback with hands-on one-on-one expert coaching, coaches that have been at every single level. When you get into one of those shooting bays, you're going to get that instant analytical feedback, the depth of your shot, the arc of your shot. If you're shooting too far to the left or to the right, it'll tell you, give you your percentages of how you're hitting shots to the left, to the right, down the middle, from distance. It's just a real amazing technology that they use, and they have it for you at both their locations, and you can join on a monthly membership. I would suggest you go out there, visit one of the two locations, have them give you the tour, tell them to explain how it all works, and go up and sign up for a month. Whether you're a kid trying to make a high school team, a high school player trying to make it at college level, or even a college player trying to become a pro, you can become better all around, a better basketball player, but specifically a better shooter of the basketball with the proper technique from Shoot 360 and the proper coaching. In Collierville, that number is 901-316-5500. They're located at 85 Market Street. And again, they have the shooting bays with the Shoot 360 technology. Cordova has all the bells and whistles. This is a really nice place. 50,000 square foot facility on Big Orange Road. Call them at 901-779-3176. One of the owners, Thaddeus Young, you may have heard of him, 17-year NBA veteran. The future of basketball training is here. It's called Shoot 360 Memphis. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Did you miss your favorite Sports 56 show?
No!
Check out the podcast, broken down hourly, at sports56whbq.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to like and subscribe. Never miss any Sports 56 show again with our podcasts available daily from Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
56 Mornings.
Good morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
We had a caller, CD, recently, last segment, ask us about the draft and about the players, and you rattled off, you know, the guys that are expected to be the top four or five picks. And we often get into the debate whether it's best player available or do you draft for position. When three or four or five guys are all put in the same boat, meaning they're all considered as good as each other, one doesn't stand out from the other. Is that when you look at the position? If you ended up doing your homework as a team, as an organization, and you came to the conclusion, I'm not saying that this will be the case, but you came to the conclusion that those top four guys that you talked about are all equal in talent, can all be all-stars, do you then look for the guy that fits your needs more than the others?
Yeah. That and his character.
Need is a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the injuries too, even though
the injuries and character right along with that. Yeah.
The thing too, like, and you go back to fans, and they're like more frustrating for a fan base than tanking would be like what New Orleans is going through. Like they traded the draft pick. They were absolutely not tanking. Went into the year, we're not tanking. We're giving up our first round draft pick
to make a trade. First round pick,
and they can't, and they're still not good.
Right.
So you're like, that's the fan base is like, what? I mean, we're just not good. Like, we're just bottom line bad, even trying to be good.
Well, let me ask you. Queen and Fears have a lot of potential. They showed a lot of potential this year. Zion's been healthy for the most part, knock on wood for him. Do you look to trade Zion, and can he help a team that is a good team for the future?
Yeah, because he picked his value back up. So I would try to see if I could go in that direction. But it's tough, though, because he still can sell you tickets in New Orleans. Just, well,
he can sell you tickets, and then he could also get hurt at the drop of a hat.
This is true. You know, so I would probably really, because of that part of it, go ahead and just try to move off of that and come around with something else. And then they also got to find a coach. Because they, you know, ever since they moved on from Willie Green, the guy that's there now is doing fine, but Joe Dumars is just working up right now.
Well, and Michael Malone was supposedly one of the top candidates.
And Chip has sailed.
And they aren't getting him. Andrew Texas says it's really tough watching the Grizzlies lose and tank, but one positive to come from it is your average family with kids that may not be able to afford tickets are able to come to the games due to excess tickets available. Yeah, if you've never been to an NBA game or whatever, and you want to go watch a game, you can find very cheap tickets for Grizzlies.
That's
games.
True,
and actually have a decent experience.
Yeah, again, I mean, because the games have still been like the Grizzlies have played hard. Like
they play hard, they compete.
It's a bunch of guys that you're like, who the hell are these guys?
They are,
but the games are entertaining still for the most part.
I think the guys have done well, and like I said yesterday, you got to give Isolo and the coaching staff credit because they have been able to bring in all these new faces and find a way for them to be competitive, at least for part of the game, until they go into tank mode. And then he sits the better guys in the fourth, or he gets the word from the Godfather, pull the plug here. This guy's not playing. Absolutely. But they have been actually impressive to watch some of these young guys. Ryan Rupert to step in there and get a triple-double like he did to do what he did. Some of these other guys. We've seen Omax, again, a former first-round pick that could be a good part, a big part of the future. I mean, I don't know a big part, but a part of the future for the Grizzlies. What about some of these other guys? We've seen G.G. Jackson get his opportunities, whether it's in Memphis or they look to trade him and he's part of a deal maybe with Ja over the summer. He has shown that he can play and be a rotation player. So there's positives that have come out of it. You just don't want to see this every year. And unfortunately, two out of the last 3 years it's happened. because of injuries. The main reason.
The problem the Grizzlies have, and Jeff Calkins wrote, let us say that he talked to the one a couple at the game that is dropping their season tickets. And again, it's not that they're like, oh, we just don't agree with tanking. No, it's they don't trust the franchise right now. That's the biggest Grizzlies issue, is people don't trust the franchise because they don't – there's nobody out there explaining anything to the fans. Like, what's going on? What is exactly what are we trying to do?
Okay.
The Ja Morant stuff, all that. Okay. That's the issue the Grizzlies face, is people right now have lost trust in the franchise. You know, the even like the LeBron stuff, like just somebody on this franchise come out and defend the franchise.
Absolutely.
Rather than Desmond Bane or the coach of the Toronto Raptors. Like, people on this franchise defend the city of Memphis. Come out and say something. But it's like, I think people just right now, there's like, again, there are a lot of people who still think they're moving, and I think that's dumb. But there's just a lack of trust, and people are questioning, like, it's just kind of this blind send you a ticket renewal and say you're supposed to do it. It's like, well, I need to hear more about what's going on and why I should be renewing these tickets.
Okay, I'm very glad that you brought that up, because I've brought it up several times. I have gone off on them several times, and you know, your calmer heads prevail with you. But again, you work for the hustle and you do the games, but I'm glad you brought that up, because we're all in agreement. I was talking with Brett Norsworthy yesterday. We were texting back and forth. We're all on the same page. There is no reason why Kleiman, really Para, but again, I'm starting to believe that Para is a frozen Ted Williams head somewhere in some high, one of those cryogenic things. Somebody has to say something. Wexler, Para, somebody has to say something to reassure the fan base. And nothing is being said. It's BS. It's absolute BS. There are people here that live and die by that team. That kids that are so young and now they're teenagers, whatever, and that's all they've known.
That's all they've known. Yeah.
And so to be as quiet as they have been, and maybe they'll say, oh, there was nothing to say. No, there is something to say.
A whole lot to say.
You step up when you have LeBron James ripping apart the city, or you have somebody else saying something negative. You have to step up and do something. And you're sitting there on your high castle there on the top of the mountain and not saying anything is absolute BS. And everybody knows it. Everybody out there knows that's BS. And so I didn't read that article, but that's very, very interesting, as it's more of a trust factor of the organization. And I can understand where those people are coming from.
And the other part of it is that they're going to have a huge, in all likelihood, a huge PR hit this offseason, because people still is, and again, they need to be out in front trying to explain more about it. But when they trade Ja, it's not going to make people happy, because that's, again, he's the attraction of this team.
Problem is, if you throw Gorilla in the trade, her with Ja, that'll be really bad.
It makes sense to trade.
Oh my gosh, we're dead if that happens.
It makes sense to trade him. And again, he hasn't been out there for them to come to be the attraction, because he can't stay on the floor.
Right, right.
But it's still like one of the things that those people talk about. They believe it's a premature rebuild, getting rid of Ja, do it, because people just don't want Ja gone. They want to watch Ja play basketball. Again, they haven't been able to do that even when he's been a Grizzly. So it makes sense. But the team needs to be way better on the PR front of things.
Well said, my bud. All right, when we come back, I'm sure DeMichael Cole will have some things to say about it as well. We'll continue the conversation about the Grizzlies, the NBA, the NBA draft. That will kick off hour number two. That'll be followed by JP, Jerry Palm. You're tuned into Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy